Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
We were going to just continue to bring really good football players in here. And when you look at the roster, like, you feel good about really all 22 guys starting and playing in a pro football game. So when you're taking these guys, you know that it's going to increase the level of competition. You know that you're just throwing more talent, and everything usually settles out the way it's supposed to when you continue to do that. That's what I think really good rosters do.
That was Ryan Poles as we try to determine what grade we give the Bears draft. And the funny part is, we know that sometimes you love a draft class and then you don't like how the results turn out on the field or how the team makes it fit all together. I did have a good laugh when Ryan Poles drafted his way out of the third round over the weekend on Friday. I talked about the third round being the danger zone for Ryan Poles just based on previous draft picks and unfortunately guys not panning out. It's not their fault they were drafted there, but it is an indication of how the team views that round. When do things get developmental? When do things become people just trying to reinvent the wheel? And unfortunately, I think there was a lot of that going on previously for the last three drafts that we've seen. So, you know, think safe. Points to the temple. You don't actually have to worry about the third round if you just get out of it entirely, which is, I think, what happened a little bit. But it's still the details of the picks that we did see with the Bears where I think, Marshall, we can point to part of it as being clearly guys got off the board earlier than maybe they would have liked, right? Three tackles go before the Bears were able to draft at 10. They get the tight end they want in Colston Loveland. Comps to Sam Laporta, as we know, in Detroit. But when they decide to draft, say, Ozzie Trapillo in the second round, you know, after they saw all the running backs go off the board. You know, Bears, we talked a lot about the need for running back. They don't end up drafting one until the seventh round in Kyle Monongai out of Rutgers. That was the 233rd pick overall. The rest of the class, Luther Burden, that was a very sexy pick from what a lot of people say, the wide receiver out of Mizzou. Shamar Turner, defensive lineman out of Texas A&M, also in the second round. Ruben Hippolyte, the linebacker from Maryland, known for his speed. Zah Frazier, the defensive back from UTSA, and Luke Newman from Michigan State, and that rounds out your class. It's a robust class. It's more than we saw last year, that's for sure, just personnel-wise. But in a draft where you could argue that when 5 through 50 were what a lot of experts thought were relative in talent level, the Bears decided to stand pat or draft back. You know, they traded back to get more value. They did not move up, you know, so that I think gives you an indication of how they feel about where they were in the draft based on perhaps who was off the board at the times it was their turn to pick.
So since we visited last on Friday and we were talking about Colston Loveland and we both said, okay, this is an offensive pick for an offensive mind, and you've got to get Ben Johnson the tools he feels like he needs to get it done. We know he runs a lot of things out of a two tight end set. And I said, but the rest of the draft will tell us, you know, what's really good. And the fact that, as you mentioned, they got out of the third round, but in the process, they acquired three different picks from picks 39 to 62. And I marry that with the statement before the draft about them getting three impact players and possibly four. And the move to get a third second-round pick tells you they expect Shamar Turner at number 62, the defensive tackle out of Texas A&M, to be an impact player. And I look at the offensive tackle and Ozzie Tripillo, when we all thought maybe Ariante Irsay would be the guy that they could have taken at 41. And I look at that and I was like, all right, they clearly didn't have as high a grade on him as other people did, because he was right there at 41. And they said, let's get more value in the second round by making a trade and going back a little bit to get Tripillo and getting Shamar Turner. I don't have a problem with any of that. And I know this is a deep running back draft class, but if you're trying to tell me that Kyle Menange at 233 overall, that that's a guy that's going to come in and be the 1A, 1B, however you want to define it, with DeAndre Swift, your offense better be spectacular. Your offense better be spectacular. And I don't want to hear any issues about the running back position based on what we know is on their roster now. Now, could they go out and get a free agent running back of some kind, make an addition off somebody who gets, you know, waived a post roster waiving? Yeah, they could do that. But looking at what I look at right now, we talk about draft grades, I'm giving it a C+. I would give it an I, because that's what I give every draft every year, but I know people are going to hold a gun to my head and say, no, you pick something. So it's incomplete to me, because I don't know how any of these guys are really going to turn out.
That's how I feel. You know, the question, and we'll go over this with Mark Grody, we'll talk about it with Anthony Heron later in the show, is whose draft was this? Yeah, and it's funny because it's always a combination. But when I consider what we talked about the entire time leading up to the draft, once Brian Poles even said this at the owners' meetings, free agency was over, in his mind, or pretty much over, I get that indication. He also told you what he was going to do when he talked about acquiring talent in free agency and acquiring need and then being able to go out and draft the best player available. I disagree with that concept. You know, you drafted for need when you drafted Caleb Williams. Perhaps you drafted best player available when you decided to take Roma Dunze. You're trying to figure out how all these pieces fit together. But the running back room is not strong enough to me. And especially in a draft where you had a running back class that was very, very complimented, very vaunted. It wasn't just Ashton Jeanty and some dudes. It was a very deep running back class. That's why we saw them all go early. And the Bears, we talked so much about them having three picks in the top 50, four in the top 72. That was going to be their album cover. You thought in that four, you were going to get an offensive lineman. You were going to get somebody who reflected the draft's talent level when it came to running back. And for that, I give it a C. I understand that they're thrilled about Luther Burden. I want to see how this all fits together. Tell me how much ball you have for everybody to go around, because when I'm talking about Cole Kmet, for example, not getting enough targets last year, and that's a function of the offense, and Gerald Everett was getting reads that perhaps should have gone to other people, let me know how you put this together in a way that makes it function where everybody's happy and producing. Because what I see right now is you throwing the ball way too much and not having enough running back-wise to give everybody what you want, which is an offense based on the run game. I say that with respect to DeAndre Swift and what he brings to the table, not as a downside. Where's your downhill runner in this group?
I guess it's Kyle Menungai. I guess that's who it's supposed to be based on, or Roschon Johnson.
You're trying to make it Roschon Johnson? We're still talking about Ian Wheeler? You know, and we're still talking about how this team needs offensive line depth.
Well, I mean, they addressed Ozzie Trapillo. I don't know how good he will be. The issue with Trapillo for me, and I say issue, the concern, the question I have, I mean, he doesn't play left tackle. At least that hasn't been his regular position. He can play left tackle, but from all accounts, his left tackle isn't as good as his right tackle. So now I go back to, this is what I was thinking when they took Trapillo, and I'm reading up on him to make sure I remember right. Because I looked at tackles coming into the day, right? You're like, okay, they need a tackle. And one of my things was, they need a left tackle, right? But then I go back to what Ryan Poles told us about the possibility of left tackle being a thing for Darnell Wright. I'm not a fan of that. I think Darnell Wright has settled in on the right side, and you should probably let him be that guy on the right side. But looking at what they have, is it a matter of Ozzie Trapillo, Braxton Jones, Kieran Amagaji for left tackle, or is it those three guys plus Darnell Wright as a possibility at left tackle? That's what my first question is. And that's a scary question because I thought we'd be getting settled now, but we still have more questions even though the draft is over.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a blanket look when I consider how I feel about certain draft principles. I always want some offensive line on the in a draft. It's a matter of how, especially when you know you've got picks of value like that. You took the second graded by many tight end, second, you know, at 10 overall, and I get that. But when you originally had those high level, you know, picks in the draft, you know, your 39, for example, and then what you had previous to your trade with Buffalo.
Which trade with Buffalo?
Yeah, exactly. Also, what's up with pick 109? Why didn't you want it? Is there a superstition there that is concerning to anybody? That was hilarious. The saga of pick 109. That was one of the funnier things I had seen, where they traded it away, got it back, and then traded it away again.
And to the same team, right? So that's
that was just funny.
That's what's even more making you wonder. Overall, here's why I said C+, but I just feel like they should have a starting left tackle from the, and maybe they do, and I'm just not reading the tea leaves right. But they need to have a starting left tackle. So I thought coming out of this draft, and they need to have a starting running back coming out of this draft, and maybe they do, and I just. And unfamiliar, but I will say this. One of the reasons I was okay with the Luther Burden III is because of the Debo Samuel comparisons. And if he's going to be a Debo Samuel type and Colston Loveland's going to be this crazy route runner at tight end, then all of a sudden I could see Samuel maybe in the backfield on some plays. And that changes the dynamic of what Ben Johnson can do with his offense,
well,
perhaps.
Burden is a slot guy. Like, Burden was slot primarily at Missouri. That's where his production is. Like, when I was trying to figure out who's your slot, and I think I put like seven different Bears into that position. At one point, I was like, oh, well, DJ Moore is produced out of this. Oh, maybe that's Loveland. Oh, perhaps that's Zacchaeus, who they got in free agency. Olamide Zacchaeus. And I was like, oh, no, it's definitely Luther Burden. Like, that was one of those where I'm like, okay, that position is square. You know what you're getting there. So I just go back to the principle of, though, your line is not set. You told us that basically when you had to trade significant capital to acquire two guards and you had to go out and spend in free agency to get a center. That still doesn't address what I still think is the most important position on the line, which is your left tackle outside of your center. Like, your center has become more crucial. I feel like it's left tackle, center, 1-1A. So you're telling me that out of what you've seen and how you want competition at these positions, that you're okay somewhat with what you're seeing at LT. Like, that's where I need to see the depth chart here based on the draft you just had.
They don't have a depth chart. I know that part. I know that answer. They don't have a depth chart.
They say they don't have a depth chart. Here's a rule. Anytime a coach says he doesn't have a depth chart, and I hear it, especially before college football, every year.
It may not be written down, but it exists. It may not be written down, but it exists. It exists in his head. If you force someone to tell you, if you put the lasso of truth, if Wonder Woman herself came in, Diana, she came in here, put the lasso of truth on these coaches, they would tell you what their depth chart is.
They
there
would.
Is an order.
Do you know why? You have to figure out your personnel groupings.
And back to the, so you talk about Luther Burden. One of the things, like, if he's in the slot and you're, that's cool if you're talking about three wide receivers, but if we're doing all this stuff out of play action, how often are three wide receivers going to be on the field?
Also, here's the other piece of this. What do we know about a new head coach when he comes into the NFL? Players come and go. Guys who you thought were talented and established suddenly are no longer because it's a new system.
So who's in jeopardy here?
Who's the odd man out? What referendum is this on the talent that you did have existing that you haven't addressed yet?
I don't know that Ben Johnson thinks the Bears are as skilled as they... Well, actually, I do know that Ben Johnson doesn't think the Bears are as skilled as they need to be based on who was taken with the 10th pick and the 39th pick. I think he was like, we got to get more skill in here, more explosive playmakers in here. And so I'm just wondering, like you just said, who's the odd man out, whether that's a depth thing or off the roster thing. Who's not going to be on the field the majority of the time when you're running different personnel?
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
There's a drive to deep right. That ball is crushed. Look out in the Allegheny.
I mean, devastation of a baseball, of a game. Trajectory changing for two franchises. That's what that Kyle Schwarber home run was, as heard on TBS. Ernie Johnson with the call. I love the genuine, oh my God, that baseball was obliterated right there. So I'm glad we got to hear that. Look, Pat Hughes has the call of record, and we heard that already. That's the best call, but I like hearing the national guys because they don't know it the way we know it, and they finally got to see it the way we were seeing it. And as a matter of fact, Pat Pat Hughes and I were on the same page last night. Of course, when he's in Pittsburgh, he thinks about what is going on with Kyle Schwarber. And here he was as I was listening to Cubs radio last night here on The Score.
Thinking about the Allegheny River, I remember a home run that Kyle Schwarber hit in a playoff game, the wild card playoff game between the Cubs and Pirates. It came against Gerrit Cole here at the end of the 2015 season. After that splashdown that reached the Allegheny on the fly, it was one of the very first few ever at that time that landed there in the drink on the fly. But every year I would see him at the Cubs convention, and as I would introduce him, he would come up and be on stage right near me, and I would say, "How you doing, Allegheny?" And he knew exactly what I was talking about.
Absolutely.
And something told me he enjoyed being reminded of the Allegheny. Who wouldn't?
I enjoy just hearing it now. And I didn't hit it.
What a great moment.
What a great moment and what a great memory from Pat, because he wasn't the only one. Even on the marquee broadcast, Alex Cohen and Jim DeShays were talking about remembering 2015. And I don't know why we all had the same collective sports thought at the same time, because I was thinking about it prior to them saying it when I was watching the game last night. And maybe it's the beauty of the atmosphere and the Cubs being at the level they're at right now, where you do want some other teams to have that same mutual competition, because it does make you better.
The fact that the Cubs are winning right now, they've won 60% of the games at 18-12, it lends to the idea that more of that is possible. And I think that's why, specifically right now, that takes you to a certain mindset and a certain place mentally. Watching the Cubs hit the Pirates over the head with 9 runs in a perfect shutout. That, as we said off the top of the show, this was textbook win. You play a bad team, you beat them down.
You didn't even strike out. Not a strikeout.
Zero.
But that is what, when we talked about how difficult their schedule was through the month of April. Hey, guess what, guys? Last day of April. That's behind us now. We don't have to talk about that anymore. We could talk about it through the reference and the frame of that was a really tough start to the schedule and they got through it. But now it's like they've got regular teams and bad teams and they'll still have to play good teams. I know the Mets are looming, the team with the best record. But overall, you have to feel so good about where the Cubs and specifically their offense is right now that you're thinking about more moonshots into the Allegheny. Kyle Tucker, go ahead. Knock yourself out. Michael Bush, if you want to take one. Pete Crow Armstrong, I know you can go deep. I know you've got power to all fields. Hit one into the river.
Against a lefty.
Put in the drink.
It's like Cliff Floyd telling Lawrence Holmes that he was trying to hit the lights at Homewood Flossmoor.
Go for it.
You got to start somewhere. You aim high.
Hey, and then the bigger, even bigger part of all of this, just to add to what Marshall said, is maybe we're seeing it again right now with the Cubs, but where the hell has it been for the last four years? I understand, like, life moves fast and regimes succeed and then they break up. But guess what has been inexcusable? And I'll allow a little bit of room for the pandemic, but where'd it go for the last 4 years? Why have the Cubs been in the playoffs for the last 4 years after they had set a new precedent for their fans starting in 2015? The fans continue to act accordingly, but the front office has not.
I will never forget listening to Buster Olney talk about on his podcast the fact that the Cubs were a team that was built to have a sustained playoff run, similar in the vein of the Astros. Yes, 3 straight NLCSs. Pales in comparison to the team that I talked about who's going to play the White Sox with 7. But the point is, it can be done. You know, and when you consider that everything that we all went through only resulted in the same amount of World Series over that span as the Nationals taking it out of the wild card 2 years later.
I don't have a problem with the Cubs not winning multiple World Series. I get it. It's really hard. The era was not a failure. The Cubs won a World Series, okay? And I did say greed is good, so I a little bit of a hypocrite on that. But what I would have liked, though, is just the opportunity to have the proverbial bite at the apple. And they stopped having that. Shame on the Cubs for that part.
Well, and we knew it when we saw it. Look at how the Phillies value Kyle Schwarber. And it's not necessarily in regular season production. It is in playoff production, in clutch moment production, which is, you can't quantify. Like, that is a very difficult thing to discuss. Playoff war, sure, you can try to do it that way. Playoff runs, weighted runs created plus, maybe. But when they decided to trade away Yu Darvish...
That there's no excuse for that one.
When they decided to... And here's the issue with that. We should be talking about those prospects outside of just Owen Casey now. You know, that's the part of this that's frustrating. That was the last time I was the full-time host on the Midday Show. You know?
Yeah.
And then, addition to that, letting Kyle Schwarber walk. There's two huge answers as to how you continue to make this sustainable.
I have to say, at the time that they let Kyle Schwarber walk, it felt like it was time. Now, we were all wrong about that, but the whole approach at the plate for the Cubs had gotten plain bad, and that included Kyle Schwarber. Did they make a mistake in retrospect? Absolutely. But I was definitely one of the people that said, yeah. And, you know, Schwarber was maybe the best player throughout that run, some of the biggest hits ever. We've been talking about it. But at the time, it did feel like it was there needed to be some... Not everybody could be swinging, because the concept of the Cubs then was hit the ball over the wall, right? Get as many thumpers. Have Kyle Schwarber lead off. I'll never forget going into the Pirates locker room for a game, just like a random Saturday game, looking up at the lineup. Kyle Schwarber's hitting lead off. We all laughed. Like, it was like this funny thing, and now we see that. I think Joe Maddon, like, sort of started that concept of having your power guy start off a game, but it all faded away. They weren't hitting. They were striking out more. There was no contact. That was the problem. And then they sort of overcorrected for a couple of years to where it was contact, but not the right kind of contact.
Yeah, the threat of power is imminent. That on good teams, on playoff teams, on contenders, you have to have guys who strike fear into opposing managers, starting pitchers, bullpen, whoever. There's got to be certain spots. And the Cubs have that right now. Right, they have guys when they step up, and you see Kyle Tucker followed by Seiya Suzuki, followed by Michael Bush, or even Carson Kelly at this point. PCA, there are guys who, you know, if you make a mistake, they can hit it over the wall.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the prototypical person was like 2004 David Ortiz. Yeah, where he walks up and you're like, oh hell, panic! Whatever you've done in the inning, just panic.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you knew, and that is the feeling you want. You know, you want to have that player. But here's the issue I have: is at the time, I understand that the Cubs had a payroll that was largely affected by attendance. We didn't know how long this was going to last. I understand all of that, but you also knew you were going to play baseball. You know, and that's the other side of this. Kyle Schwarber could have been a discounted, but or maybe he doesn't. Maybe the change of scenery, because Theo is such a believer in this. You know, maybe that's what has vaunted him to where he's at right now.
Yeah, he needed a change of scenery.
I mean, perhaps
the numbers bear that out.
He did
though.
At the time. Yeah.
But when you consider what the loss meant and how it wasn't responded to in kind. And they tried to a little bit with Jock Peterson. Peterson ends up getting traded,
yeah.
Helps the Braves win the World Series. You know, like that piece of it matters too in all of this, because the plan was not committed to in a way. So then, you know, that's the time where you look back at it. You know, it is the time where you talk about the prospects who should be online right now out of a transaction like that had that much meaning.
But they've got the contact back. It seems like every ball the Cubs hit right now is a hard hit ball. So they actually have, like, Jed Hoyer has going on right now what he and Theo imagined or reimagined starting in 2018, where let's get the contact, but it's taken a little bit too long to get to this point. Let's hope that this is some form of sustained success that we're seeing.
The lineup is lining up, and they're hitting the ball hard, and more importantly, they're not striking out.
I mean,
zero?
To have a game,
how many did they have last
to
time?
To have
zero.
A game
zero.
Without a single strikeout in the year of our Lord 2025 is truly some sort of baseball miracle.
Oh, the Lord.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Who is calling on our score hotline? It's brought to you by Circa Sports Illinois.
Who calling?
Hey! Ozzy!
It has been very great news to see you got your own show. You earned it. You deserve it. Now you have it.
Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score.
To get in the psyche of a hitter is probably a place where you don't want to go at any stage. So to get him out of that environment, not worry about his numbers, and, you know, focus on some adjustments, both, you know, physical and certainly approach to be able to improve some things. So, yeah, we look forward to this opportunity to do it, and he's on board, and we think good things will come out of it.
That was White Sox general manager Chris Getz talking about somebody who we're trying to figure out how they fit in, not only on the team, but just in the organization right now, in Colson Montgomery, who's being sent to Arizona because he had been struggling at the AAA level. Since being promoted to Charlotte in 2024, he had been batting .204 in 153 games. He had a back issue at spring training that caused him to be sent back to Charlotte. I can't figure out where he's supposed to be right now. And unfortunately, I don't think he can either.
Well, that's not really what he's supposed to be doing. That's the organization's job to figure out what exactly he needs. And I guess this is the approach they decided to go with, getting him individual instruction back in Arizona, which is also the site of the last time he was productive, which was Arizona Fall League. I think the issue here is this is the guy that came into the season as the number four White Sox prospect and the number 36 overall prospect by MLB Pipeline. And the fact that he hasn't done anything of note besides that Arizona Fall League time in the last, since the start of last season, that gives me pause overall. When people were talking about him in spring training as, hey, he's going to be the opening day shortstop, that's what it's looking like, I was like, based off what? And they're like, well, you know, he had a good Arizona Fall League. I was like, is that the measuring stick now? And I get that he's supposed to be advancing because of his age, how long he's been in the minor leagues, but at some point you've got to have production that matches the merit of a call-up, no matter how highly thought of you are as a prospect.
Yeah, he had done that, though. That was the thing. The reason they talked about him the way they did at spring training was because that was the indication that he was making the turn. And I had said, like, I understand you're hurt, but at some point I wonder about diminishing returns for some of these guys in the minor leagues. It's not like he's taking somebody's spot who's a big deal on this team. Like, I hate to be so blunt about it, but your shortstop had been DFA'd by you in January, and you bring him back. So that's how you feel about this. Now, people will say, yes, that Jacob Anaya is a defensive first shortstop. Yes, okay, sure, but that's another way of saying he doesn't provide offense. You know, that's an unfortunate situation. The reality is that, to me, this says more about the entire organization right now and where they are than I think even just the individual's path. Where's the development for somebody like this?
When you say he had turned
the
corner, where's
the help? Where is the evaluation? Why did it fail so badly? What about big league camp was such an issue where you're now having to go all the way back to Arizona during the season?
Well, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves in terms of the 43 strikeouts and 103 plate appearances this season in AAA. But what
I know what the numbers are, but why are the numbers the way they are?
Because he hasn't been good. I don't know if it's his back injury.
Yes, we know he hasn't been good.
No, I'm saying I don't know if it's his back injury and an extension of that or whatever. What I'm saying is I didn't see anything last year that said I agree with your point about the development has not been there, clearly, because he has not taken a step forward. My point was, what step forward did he ever take to say he should be on the major league roster besides it's a bad major league roster, so he should be on the roster? I think that's my overall point. He hit 214 last year, and you don't have to make this a batting average thing. You could say he slugged 381. That's like his OPS was 710, but he wasn't good last year in the minor leagues. That was my point. He just wasn't good. So the question we should be asking is, who's not getting the development done, or is this a Colson Montgomery specific problem?
We could also ask the same question about Matt Shaw. Like, which one of these two hot prospects, infield prospects, Matt Shaw or Colson Montgomery, is going to end up being a better major league player? I don't know.
Matt Shaw did stuff last year in the minor leagues.
Right.
He was good.
My issue is the Cubs did not lose the most games in major league history last season. They have had prospects that we thought came online, Matt Mervis, and it turns out that they do have talent. They just needed perhaps a change of scenery or a different voice. This is a White Sox team that DFA'd people like Jorge Vera, who had significant value with the team. And this is since Chris Getz has become the GM. And you DFA him and you get nothing. Not only are you setting your farm system back because you've decided major prospects are now graded no prospect, you also came in saying you wanted to develop people and bring in tools. And he's talked about some of the advances that the scouts and maybe at the minor league level they've also made on this team. But this is an organizational failure to have something like this happen, either in the ranking or in the production or in the lack of getting him what he needs. And what concerns me is the red flag here speaks to a bigger issue that was the reason this man, Chris Getz, got hired in the first place.
You were told that he was going to fast forward things because he was already familiar with the organization. But I was like, wait, what was his job before? That didn't fit at the time to me. But I was like, I guess that's what they're going to do.
It's not just that. It wasn't just the timeline issue. It was also the fact that he said stuff like, I don't like our team. And when he was saying that, he meant like the makeup of how they're getting from the minor leagues and the development to the big leagues.
And he was in charge of...
Precisely. That's, yes. Again, another thing I was going to point out is that he was in charge of that. So when this happens, this is an indictment of you as well. You know, Brian Bannister, we've talked a lot about what he's brought as a positive to the organization and how he can figure out how players fit in on the team. You get a guy like Eric Fetty, you know, you develop him, you take a risk on him, and you're able to somewhat trade him for some value. But, you know, the return is arguable at that point. But the point is, like, that is a good example of what you can do at this point in your situation as a team and an organization. But there is a lot of truth to be told here as to the failure of this one individual and the lack of being able to develop or something happening. Is this a change of scenery situation for him? Either way, to have the major league grade of such a high prospect when these are people evaluating the minors en masse, this is an issue.
It ruins what teams that are 100 loss teams need, and that is light at the end of the tunnel, something to attach your fandom to, something to attach your hope to. And guess what? We all obsessed. You know, you talked about like why his name is so out there. It's because we all attached ourselves to Colson Montgomery. We said, wow, Colson Montgomery, this guy's going to be great. When are they going to call him up? Is he going to break spring with the team? And then all of a sudden he starts to take this slide down, and then the slide becomes precipitous. And now we're in a place of, oh man, if this guy is not good, where's the hope coming from? Because in all teams, like you go back to the Cubs when they sucked and they were losing 100. At least you had draft picks that you were looking forward to. You had light at the end of the tunnel. Most teams do. The Sox have lost back-to-back 100. They've had back-to-back 100 loss seasons, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
And they're playing host to a team coming up over the weekend that had three back-to-back 100 loss seasons in the Astros, and they took advantage of the 3-1-1s. Now you can't do that.
It's a great example. That's the best example.
That is the example, but here's the other part of it is, yeah, they had guys grade no prospect too. And they had high names like Delino DeShields at one point, I think, was graded no prospect. You know, and he of course was able to get back in. John Singleton's a great story with them. You know, he was a focal point of a massive trade, and then ends up the Hunter Pence trade, and then ends up, you know, making it with the big league team 10 years later.
Great call.
10 years later. That's not the point. The point is, you don't have very many of these guys in your organization.
Yeah.
Edgar Caro gets called up. Edgar Caro is the product of the trade that involved Renato Lopez and Lucas Giolito. They were products of previous trades of big league talent. Where's your growth when it comes to people who are in your system?
Chase Meidroth, I guess you got it.
Meidroth was the product of a trade.
Kyle Teal, product of a trade.
Yeah.
That's my point. Like, some of these, you have to draft and be able to develop these individuals. And the GM that is in the chair right now was hired to do that.
I think the point about the draft, that actually makes sense. Like, where are the homegrown prospects, not guys that you acquired from casting off? Although the Eric Fetty is a very good example of the things that they should be doing in this time. Sign as many guys that you know you can flip at the deadline.
And listen, Sean Burke is a good example of developing talent. Like, I've loved how they view pitching as an organization. I've loved how they develop it. But on the other side of this, I feel bad for this individual. I feel bad for Colson Montgomery. I feel bad for the whole situation. But worse than that, I feel bad for the organization. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm also thinking of the Sun-Times sports cover that came out. And it's a picture of Luis Robert on the ground. And it says 2024 was the worst ever. But unfortunately, 2025 is feeling a lot like it. And that's what you don't want. You know, I know what it's like to cover 100 lost teams back to back. And ultimately, there is some improvement. I know what it was like to cover this White Sox team when they were rebuilding and there was improvement.
Did you cover the Astros? Is that
yes?
Did, oh, that the back-to-back?
But, yeah, but okay. Also, Tim Anderson, you know, at the time was a good indication of the team being on the upswing. Not only did they call him up, but you saw the game slow down for him in incredible ways. Jose Abreu was still a cornerstone of this team, giving you his best years. There were other pieces to it that made it work.
Moncada. I mean, I know that was a trade.
Product of a trade.
Pretty shrewd trade. It felt like it at the time.
Well, and that's it. But yeah, they still wanted to make those guys come online. And I don't know. I don't know why this upsets me so much. But I think it's just, this is an indication of the health of the organization or minor league development, too.
Was Gurriel a Houston draft
yes.
pick?
Okay. He was an international bonus pool.
Okay, I have healthy fear of all the Gurriels, just like the Alous.
No,
any
that's
family.
Fair.
Yuli
yeah.
is
that's fair.
40 yeah. and still a threat at the bat.
Scary, scary.
Like, still a threat at the plate.
How many Gurriels are there? There's at least two Gurriels.
There's, I think three.
Three, they scare, all of them scare me.
Well, I think when you look at the White Sox specifically right now, you kind of have to take a step back so you can get a wider view. The problem is, when I take a step back, I see a wider view of more of the same.
I mean, but that's the, you know, it's, if you look at the Sun-Times sports page today, that's the indication as well. But either way, when you're talking about the why, when you're finding the whys, and I mean to say that as a trigger on purpose.
Matt Nagy, yes.
This is an example of what isn't happening that needs to.
Wait and see is the only thing I can say at this point, because we're waiting for that next wave of guys to come up.
Here's the thing. You can say that about literally every segment in our show, wait and see.
No, no.
We're going to wait and see what happens tonight with the Cubs. We're going to wait and see what happens with the Bears.
No, but I'm saying, when I talk about the Cubs, I'm talking about specific things that I want to see. With this wait and see, it's when I ask, what do I want to see? They're not changing anything within this organization tonight.
I'm worried that we aren't the only observers in this, that people who should be taking action to circumvent these problems
within the organization, you're saying,
like, do they need more people? Do they need somebody else on
or
this?
Do they need better people?
Do they know how to sign players other than Andrew Benintendi, who did
homer
last
because
night?
Here's what concerns me is if this guy goes to another team or something, you know,
and it's good.
chances are if you sell low on him, for example, and you don't get anything in return,
yeah,
you know, that's what you don't want. That is an indictment of an organization.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if your prospects fail and you don't have somebody else behind him that everybody is getting excited about, then that's a real problem. It's a confused organization. It's, you know, and you can't lose back-to-back 100 games in a season and not have something to look forward to.
Well, either way, I hope I see the day where he's up at the big league level.
Yuli Gurriel was DFA'd yesterday? Yes! I don't have to be so scared.
Until somebody else picks him up.
Until there's another Gurriel that comes along. I don't know how many Gurriels
you're
are
right
out
about
there.
That, though. Yeah. It's, you know, it's strong genes in the
seriously,
team Gurriel.
There
yeah.
is no doubt about it. Alomar's, Alous, they all scare me. The baseball families frighten me. The Boones, man.
By the way, I want to hear this story that you alluded to with Mike Florio. You want to do it at halftime?
That sounds great.
Next, it is Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi. Halftime on The Score.
Yeah.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That was what was so cool about the last few weeks, was getting with Ryan, getting with Ian, getting with Trey, getting with Jeff King, and really huddling up and figuring out how we wanted to sequence the whole board. And to Ryan's credit, he stayed as disciplined as I've ever seen in terms of staying true to how we set it up. Sometimes that gets hard. Sometimes you want to pick for need, but we didn't necessarily do that. I feel really good about the direction we went and every decision we made along the way.
That was Ben Johnson. And as we continue to ask the question, now that the draft has wrapped up, you're on the Rahimi and Harris Show on The Score, your midday team. It's not just trying to figure out whose draft was it, right? It's not just us asking Mark Grody yesterday if it was Ben Johnson's draft, if it was Ryan Poles' draft. And the answer is it's never just one. It's just how much was the influence there. It's also trying to figure out how much Ben Johnson is going to help fill in the gaps that maybe the Poles front office or the Poles team has missed when it comes to talent evaluation or knowing team fit.
Yeah, I think it becomes a matter of trust. And it's not a blind trust in Ben Johnson, but it's not a full 360-degree view of Ben Johnson, because we don't know him as a head coach. We only know him as a dynamic play caller, an innovative play caller in Detroit, and what he's able to do there in terms of build the offense up. Meanwhile, what we know about Ryan Poles is he's gotten some deals done that have been very beneficial to the Bears. I'm looking at you, Carolina Panthers. But at the same time, some of the picks, third round notwithstanding, have not hit. I mean, we know that the third round is an issue, right?
Crater.
It's been a problem. But I think the bigger thing is, now as we look at where the Bears are in terms of building the team, it's not a finished product yet. And obviously we don't know just how much some of these rookies are going to contribute. We also don't know how much some of the pieces that are on this team are viewed by Ben Johnson in the same way as the last coaching staff. So how valuable or less valuable they are. So it's, do you trust the vision of Ben Johnson and his ability to mold what talent there is versus Ryan Poles' inability to build a great roster? We don't know how good or bad this roster is yet, and it's not even a finished product. But I do know Ryan Poles' track record has been, these teams haven't been good enough to be 500. They haven't been good enough to win more than 7 games.
Yeah.
So I think I lean on the optimistic side that Ben Johnson's going to make the most of what Ryan Poles has brought to market, especially since he did have part of the process picking out players to fit his system. When you talk about a Colston Loveland, when you talk about the other offensive picks throughout the draft.
Yeah, I mean, you can even say that for even the seventh player pick that they had in Luke Newman. You know, offensive tackle out of Michigan, or offensive lineman out of Michigan State. You know, he's a guard. And again, they did get some more offensive line depth. Now, was it high enough? Because Ryan Poles has been known to do that. Like, we know he will draft offensive linemen late to have backups. But I think before the draft, there was a huge swell of people saying, it's going to be remarkably different. You know, it's going to be the priority. Like, when I think of Ben Johnson association with the draft, I'm still going back to how the Lions built their team. Whether or not he is actually associated with those decisions, you know, he was the coach who helped make them good. He was the coach who benefited from the Lions, starting with key pieces like Penei Sewell and Aiden Hutchinson. You know, he was the one who helped reap the benefits of that team building the way they did from the inside out. And then we know about the running back piece of it in Jahmyr Gibbs and how that fit into all of this. That was where I could say perhaps the offensive coordinator zigged when everybody zagged and it worked out. You know, if there was a discussion there. But I think what happens a lot of times is your front office is asking your coaching staff, how does this person fit on your team? The draft board may indicate how that person fits with your scheme. You know, we could be talking about Ruben Hippolyte, even though he was graded as an undrafted free agent in the fourth round, you're hoping for the Bears or for Dennis Allen or whoever had the hope in him that he ends up being a real key piece at linebacker because of that same reason. So all of that said, I still look at the first two picks and say, okay, Colston Loveland, very specific when it came to the assignment, when it came to why he was the best player for the Bears. You know, and that indicates, by the way, need. It indicates fit more so than how they felt about Tyler Warren. Is a detail, even when it's just the number 10 overall pick, enough to say he is filling in the gaps where perhaps the Poles drafting left off?
I think the tight end is important because we know he likes to use two tight end sets over 30% of the time. Last year he ran 12 personnel. I also think this is more about, because we're coming off the draft, what the draft has meant for the Bears. How many would you guess? How many, forget about all pro, how many Pro Bowlers would you guess the Bears have drafted since 2021?
So this is after Jalen Johnson?
This is after Jalen Johnson.
I know the answer.
Yeah. What's that answer, Layla?
Zero.
I want to really bust this down, right?
Let's.
That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32, 33. And 33 plus 8 is 41. That's the last 41 players they've taken.
Don't count the other 8.
Well, okay, you're right. 33 players they've taken. No Pro Bowls. That says something about what you're doing as an organization, does it not?
Also a topic for maybe our next 5 on it. Could Kyler Gordon be the one?
Who's going to be the next original Bear, like drafted Bear to be a Pro Bowler?
A Ryan Poles pick to be a Pro Bowler. Who's the most likely?
He's probably the most likely.
This year. Now you want it to be QB1 next year.
It's not that hard to be, like, Pro Bowl isn't one of those things where, oh, it's so hard. All pro, yes.
Yeah, we're not talking about all pro.
Pro Bowl, you could be a Pro Bowl replacement. You could be like the fourth or fifth guy alternate.
That's how people talk about Mitch Trubisky being a Pro Bowler. They're always like, oh, don't take the Pro Bowl too seriously, Mitch. We know how he got there.
Who is Lamar Jackson's backup? Who was a backup quarterback and made the Pro Bowl? Huntley? Jacob Huntley? What's his?
Tyler Huntley?
Tyler Huntley, yes. He made the Pro Bowl and he was the backup that year.
Snoop. That's what they call his nickname, Snoop, for whatever reason.
There's a lot of nicknames in Baltimore, in B-more, if you will. Like, remember the Heisman connection? Big Trust? All of those.
So, Ryan Poles has never drafted a Pro Bowler. That's where I was going with that.
Pace has. Yeah, he's drafted an All-Pro.
Yes, he has.
I am not bragging on Ryan Pace
guess
as a
what?
Whole.
Guess
I am
what?
Not doing that. Don't even go there. You know how I feel about it.
Layla. Ryan Pace ain't here no more. All I'm talking about is who is here right now, making decisions right now.
This is your right now plan?
This is my right now. I'm looking at Ben Johnson and saying, yeah, it's on you, big guy, because Ryan Poles has no track record of drafting guys who are Pro Bowlers. Not all pro, just a Pro Bowler.
That's starts to add up.
And that illustrates something that I think we have talked about, and you could talk about the lack of coaching on the field. You could talk about Ryan Poles getting a second run with Ben Johnson, and I think all of us feel much more confidently in his second head coach that he's picked compared to Matt Eberflus, the first head coach that he's picked. But the pressure is now on to develop some of these guys into beyond, oh, he's a starter on the Bears. What does that even mean? Yeah. When you don't have any Pro Bowlers, what does that even mean? You're a starter on the Bears. Not an NFL starter. You're good enough to start on the Bears. You're good enough to start on a team that has won. How many games did they win last year? That's 5, right?
Oh, yeah,
and the year before, 5. They won 7, right?
Yes.
And the year before that? The year before, 3.
Yeah, I was going to say,
3 and 14.
Whatever 15 minus that total is. Yeah.
So I think the standard has to be raised from us watching with our eyes and the league's evaluation of the Bears. And that's why I hope the answer is we trust more in Ben Johnson and his success than we do in Ryan Poles and his shortcomings. I hope that's the answer.
Well, and not to quote a segment that you've also heard on The Score.
Oh, goodness.
Ben's vision. But you at least want to see how that plays out. You at least want to see how that person fits in. And you knew based on the specific need of the team what they wanted out of Colston Loveland. You know, so I do think that that is valuable in not only helping us see how this comes together, but also helping us see what he wants in somebody. You know, we've asked the question, outside of relative athletic score being a tiebreaker or a determiner for Ryan Poles' pick, what are the traits that get you from point A to B? I will again point out, Ozzie Trapillo is 6'8". I think arm length does matter to Ryan Poles. You know, I think height matters to Ryan Poles.
I think those things matter
to most.
At least
on your offensive line.
To most GMs, those things matter.
Well, there are some who don't care as much about arm length. You saw where Will Campbell went. He went 4th overall.
Yeah.
Skoronski's a Titan. You know, that didn't stop them from taking him. So that's part of the assessment where I feel like knowing what a Ben Johnson athlete is, at least after this season, will help us further understand that concept of it. But you're hoping that's the case. You're hoping that that defined understanding of what your role is going to be is Ben Johnson saying to Ryan Poles, this guy can do this thing, and that's why I want him on my team. Or Dennis Allen saying, I see this person fitting in this way on the offense or on the defense. And I think that is the case with Dio Odengbo.
I'm so excited to find out.
You know what we missed yesterday?
What did we miss?
Wishing Grady Jarrett a happy birthday.
Yesterday was his birthday?
How are we supposed to fight for him as a show interview if we forget his birthday?
The short answer is with nunchucks. That's the short answer.
I thought we agreed we were going to cage fight other shows to get Grady Jarrett on.
They won't have nunchucks, and we will.
But we've got to woo him with good timing on birthday wishes.
Happy birthday. Happy belated.
I'm so sorry, happy Grady birthday, Jarrett.
Happy birthday,
wow.
Should we do that one more time just because?
Happy birthday, Mike.
Classic.
So, I feel like we're in a good spot, though, with knowing what is what and what is not with Ben Johnson. And we're going to get to find out all together.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
What's your comfort level on playing right side versus left side? Do you have a preference?
You know, if you asked me that during the season, I would obviously say right because that's where I practiced. But as soon as the season ended, you know, going to this level especially, you want to be as versatile as possible. So I've done a ton of work at, you know, all positions except center. So I would just be ready to fill wherever is needed.
That's Ozzie Trapillo telling you he is a man of service. We got some Bears news this morning. This is Harris and Raheemy on The Score, the midday show with you. And this is from our friend Aaron Lemming on X. He reported Bears GM Ryan Poles made it sound like this morning that the Bears will start Ozzie Trapillo off at left tackle and go from there. He said they would like to have things stable by the time they hit training camp so they aren't shuffling guys around in camp. That answers a lot of questions off the bat for us about how we're trying to figure out, A, where this competition is at positions, and then also, B, what their vision was for an offensive lineman who, based on the Bears' history, was a higher draft pick than ones that they depend on. Think about Braxton Jones, 5th round. Karan Amagaji, 3rd round. So that, again, has their actions backing up maybe their thought as to where he's going to go.
Well, I think even leading into these comments, which kind of solidify where I thought we were going, the only question was, would he be the first guy that would be out there when you have Karan Amagaji, who's also looks healthy and ready to go with Braxton Jones out, who, when they do their next set of OTAs, when they do their rookie minicamp, any of it, would be running out their first team at the left tackle spot. Yes, I know we're not in pads, but still, that does mean something when you're out there working with the first team. And Trapillo seemed like the answer to me. It was easy because, well, they told us we're going to get 3 impact players, maybe 4, depending on how things landed. Knowing that in their trade, their 4th pick actually became another 2nd-round pick, Shamar Turner. You understood that, hey, if this is the 3rd guy that they've selected in this draft, they expect him to have a role. You can call swing tackle a role, but I think he's the swing pick of this entire draft and early on of the Ben Johnson era. Because if he is productive and has a role
And again, I don't expect either of the tackles to play 17 games. I hope they do.
That would be wonderful.
But it rarely happens that way, right? I think now you're seeing Ozzie Trapillo being the guy that's going to get the first shot. And then Braxton Jones will step in as a guy who's been a starter. And that's where the battle will lie at left tackle.
They have to do something about that position if they really want to improve. The play that has happened there so far just hasn't been up to par. And improving the middle of the line will help that. It'll isolate exactly where they can... I think, number one, opposing teams are going to focus on where you're weakest. So we'll find out that, you know, when we see opponents on the other side. I have a feeling Darnell Wright has been holding it down at right tackle. It would make sense that that's not where the competition is on the team. He's been doing his job.
I was told there was no depth chart, so everybody's up for grabs.
In my depth chart, it's Darnell Wright at right tackle.
Yes, and that's a good point because Darnell Wright at right tackle means it's not Darnell Wright at left tackle. That's another piece of this news that you can say, okay, it seems like he's going to stay in the position where he's been productive.
And I am weirdly optimistic. As critical as I have been about Braxton Jones, where a lot of times if you're watching the film, he's getting pushed into Caleb Williams, I am optimistic of what Ben Johnson could do with Braxton Jones because he's so good on the move.
I mean, we know Ben Johnson loves an athletic tackle.
Right, and he's really good when it comes to downfield blocking. I think he is one of the more agile, effective blockers on plays that require it. Like, I've seen him do some good stuff there.
So you like some stretch, you like some pull, you like some you like to see guys moving their feet and putting guys on their back. When I say guys, I do mean multiples in the same play. The potential of that happening in the run game, especially when you throw in play action. And now, if you've got people off balance on defense, you can do a lot more with the offense.
I just also like playing to people's strengths. And I think that is one of his, far and away. So why wouldn't you use that to your advantage? Yes, make somebody out-athlete my 6'5" guy who can block downfield.
I'd rather
sure,
you make
come
somebody
at us.
Out-rebound my 6'8" guy, except for it's not basketball, it's football.
Yeah, I mean, Ozzie Trapillo is a 6'8" guy. But I also believe that if you have skills in other sports, that's a good sign for you too. It means you know how to move. And that's a good thing. Your muscle memory is a little more agile. You can move in different ways, like you know how to fall, for example. Those are all beneficial.
Slippery like Luther Burden III, who we learned was an excellent basketball player and can get by people in space.
Yeah, I appreciate
tight
dudes
spaces.
Who can be described as athlete, for sure. But when it comes to how Ryan Poles, I think, also sees that position, what traits that he needs, height is clearly one of them, you know, with 6'5 and 6'8". And then additionally, trying to see how Trapillo's tape translates from Boston College, where Ryan Poles went to school, to the NFL.
That
where
Boston
Ryan
College
Poles
connection.
Is the GM of the team.
That Boston College connection is something else. For everybody, I mean, Ben Johnson included, that the BC kind of origins for the relationship, the team building, the front office to head coach connection. I'm interested to see where that goes, all the way down to the seventh round running back that was drafted.
Yes, who we desperately need to produce.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like,
yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.